When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Buckets and Tea NBA show. I'm your host, Katherine Nyker. Thanks so much for tuning into this week's episode. Today, joining me, you know him, you love him. He's the, you know, Raptors Republic guy. He's your guy. He's the coach, as he is now branding himself. It's Samson Folk.
Can I tell you something? I think that, like, you introduce me as if I were a bashful, like, four-year-old, you know? Like, it's wow. Like, you know him, you love him. It's your guy, it's your little guy. And I'm, like, walking out, like...
Well, I didn't do like the voice, like, the kid voice. You know
that's
what I mean?
True,
I
wasn't, but like, I don't think you do that anyway.
You love him!
I think that you are somebody who read a book that was like, kids will learn language better if you speak to them without adjusting, like, either your decibels. So you're like, hello, child. Pleasure to meet you. I'm encouraging your vocal and language skills right now.
Actually, true? You know what? So my brother had a kid just last April. So my nephew's like 11 months old now. And
congrats.
Thank you. And I was like that. I told that to my brother, that I wasn't going to raise my voice or have a cutesy voice. And I was like, you're never going to hear my cutesy voice and blah, blah, blah. Because I don't know. I guess my brother and I just have that kind of relationship. And then, of course, when I see my nephew, I'm like, hey, you know what I mean? And it just came and it came out. And then in the summer, like, he had these like cute little like baby sunglasses. And I was freaking out over how cute these baby sunglasses were. And then my brother was like, aha, I caught you. And I was like, yeah, all right.
But you did initially think that you were going to like talk to him like, hello, sir.
Yeah, it was something like, I was like, you're not going to catch me being adorable and cute.
Wait, was this more for the baby or for yourself? Like, you thought it was like emasculating or something. You're like, I won't do that.
Yeah, emasculating.
You couldn't catch me out.
No. I think it was just, I don't know. I like to have a bit of a tough side. Yeah, you could say
oh,
that.
Oh, okay.
You know, like, I'm not going to be cute and whatever. And then I melted, you know?
A relationship fascist.
A fascist?
Yeah, like, you're like, okay, we don't have to go down this.
No, do it. This is what people really want to hear. They don't care about my basketball opinions.
these are the conversations I have with Lewis about, you know, fatherhood or perhaps doggerhood, when you're like, you know, you have a dog. And he always characterizes himself as a drill sergeant. And but I perceive, I've been around Lewis and his child. I think now his two children. I think he's a fantastic father. What a great little family. But he's described himself with very severe terms before. And the outcome was good. So maybe fascist in the terms of interpersonal relationships can sometimes be a good guiding force.
Wow.
Depending if you have the right idea for what things should be going forward.
You know what? We're going to do a mailbag pod. Everyone, send us your relationship-based questions.
Yeah. Do you know a relationship fascist?
Do you know a relationship fascist? Do you think I'm one? Let us know. And we'll go from there. I'll bring that up with my therapist maybe next week if there's time.
Sure.
If there's time, you know? All right, we got to move on. We got to talk basketball here. NBA first, then Raptors stuff, per usual. I want to talk about Rudy Gobert, not because I think he's a relationship fascist, but earlier this week, he was fined $100,000 for essentially criticizing the refs. He made a gesture, like a money gesture to them, and essentially insinuated that the refs had some sort of hand in gambling. This was the largest fine, I believe, for this very specific thing to date. You know, obviously the league cares about its, you know, officiating integrity, etc. What did you think of this?
As with anything, you cannot prove a negative, i.e. the burden of proof is on the accuser. I think that is a healthy structure to build from in terms of like a societal ethic, right? So having Rudy Gobert just come out and say, like, the NBA is rigged for the Kings, I think is a negative, especially since he's doing it just based off of, like, oh, fuck this game, this was bullshit. You know, like, he's just kind of being like that type of guy. Mm-hmm. And also, if we look at where there was corruption with the league officials, it most historically went against the Kings.
Absolutely. The Lakers and Kings. So. Absolutely.
I think you could try and build a compelling case, not one you'd win anywhere, but you could try and build a compelling case that would, I don't know, pick up on the YouTube algorithm as people kind of like tuned into it, perhaps, where you say like, oh, these big teams get this type of whistle. I know there was conversation about that after Raptors versus Lakers we saw. Would it surprise me if there was like the most thorough investigation of all time and they found there was a cognitive bias towards certain teams? No. Do I think like there's an overhead expectation or directive drop down to refs to manage games towards certain like over under outcomes or certain wins versus losses? I do doubt that. Now, are there mistakes? Can you feel particularly persecuted when mistakes run towards your end of things? Yeah. Do I think Rudy Gobert was probably just like emotional and was like, oh, the NBA's totally rigged for the Kings? I do think that's probably what it was. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Like you said, I mean, bringing up the Kings is a great point. Like maybe if it were the Lakers or something like that, then it might have.
If only they didn't need Sacramento, you know,
then maybe it would hold a little more weight. I agree. Or like, you know, if someone like a Draymond Green was flippant and they kept and they were being soft again or something. But sure. I think there is a real risk for corruption because of how legalized and how much money there is in gambling. So I haven't really heard the league talk about like what measures are in place beyond their little like
new measure where players can now invest in gambling companies, which is great. Glad they ironed that out in the CBA, right?
Oh, I did not know that.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, it's because players
was that in the summer?
Yeah, because players were like, we need to be able to get a piece of the pie. And then everybody was like, that's true. You do need a piece of the pie. Now, it's probably my contention that like that pie need not be eaten in such a gluttonous fashion. But we are accelerating towards something in society here. I'll leave that there, though. Yeah.
They also have very large pieces of pie as it is.
Well, it's more so in like the, not in that they're millionaires, but that it's like labor versus ownership, I think is kind of the contention there, which I agree from like a that lens. Like, yes, you have the right to earn based on anything. But then once you get into the weeds of like, should a player be able to own or invest in a gambling company that runs odds on the sport with which they partake? Seems to me like that's
a conflict of interest,
something like that. Yeah.
I agree, because there's so many other businesses in the world that are lucrative that they could invest in if they wanted.
That's kind of the thing, right?
It's not like it's this or nothing. You know what I mean?
You know what? They often propose it that way, right? It's like, if you don't let me do this, I will scream. And that's like, I'm not saying that's NBA players. That's just like people who invest in general. And typically, you know, the American economy kind of leans towards that. Well, we don't want you to scream. And you should be able to do whatever you want. So I guess that's where we are.
Well, I mean, look, I think in this particular circumstance, you know, like Rudy Gobert was just being emotional and like heat of the moment kind of thing. But the idea that that could be real is, go ahead. You have your hand up.
Wait, go. Wait, you finished that thought.
No, go ahead.
What is the most amount of money being emotional has ever cost you?
Cost me?
Yeah.
Oh, I actually have a recent example. Well, I don't know if it's me being emotional. Okay, I'll share this. So you know I'm a huge Janet Jackson fan.
Yes. We've talked about Janet Jackson on like three of these podcasts.
Okay. Well, anyway, so she last year had a meet and greet and I spent a lot of money to do that.
Yes.
And I was like, I'm going to do this, you know, once in my life. This is huge. Had a great time. Then she announced she's coming back again. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, I do want to see her, but this is a lot of money. Right. And so I have friends who I've met through being a Janet Jackson fan. Okay.
You're part of a Janet Jackson fan club?
No, we're just our own group.
Okay.
And we're friends outside of just being Janet fans, but that's how we met.
Right.
And then the tickets go on sale and they're $1,100 more than I spent a year ago. And I was like, and I asked my friend to get them for us because we're going together. And then she's like on Ticketmaster and I'm on the phone and it's like right when the tickets went on sale and like, you know, it's all hype and I'm like debating it. And then I was like, wait, no, I can't do this. And then she said, it's too late. I bought them.
Mm.
And now I feel like I'm in debt and I'm trying to sell this single ticket. But look, this is the wrong podcast for this. I am desperate to find an eccentric gay man who will buy this ticket for me because no one else will. And it's over $3,000. So this is like me being an insane fan of something and it's cost me money and I don't want to go. I want to see the concert, but I don't want to do this meet and greet again. I met her once. It was perfect.
Oh, man.
It was perfect. And I can't recapture that moment. Ooh. And I know that. And I tried to say no. And then she bought it anyways. And it's just stupid. The whole thing's so stupid.
That is a lot of money.
It's so much money. And for people listening, like, wow, that's crazy. I know that's crazy. That's why I tried to say no.
Yeah.
But they're so crazy that they're like, yeah, like they'll spend anything to see her. Like they don't think about it.
And Rudy Gobert will spend anything to get his message out there.
Well, are you going to answer the same question?
What's the most? I'm very good at not wasting money.
Stop.
No, seriously. I'm very good at not wasting money. This is an ethic growing up that like my parents didn't spend like on anything that wasn't necessary. I haven't told this story when I was on Sportsnet, was that to raise money for like my travel basketball to go to the States and all that kind of stuff. We picked ditches like clean of garbage to get money from the government of Saskatchewan instead of like paying for something like that. So what is the most money? I don't know. I really couldn't tell you. I asked the question expecting you to have something. And I was so, honestly,
that says a lot about me.
I was so enraptured by this story of thousands of dollars being spent on a whim. And then now using, you know, the captive audience of the podcast to try and locate.
For what it's worth, my parents raised me better also. Okay. Mm. They did not raise me.
But you were corrupted by it. You were corrupted.
I was corrupted by my friend. Yeah, I was corrupted by my friend. Yeah.
So. So I don't actually have a good story, which I have to apologize for, but I was really enraptured by your telling of it.
I'm gonna ask you again at the end of the episode and then we'll see if you've thought of something.
Okay.
All right.
That's actually
there we go.
It wasn't emotional. A friend of mine said he really wanted the Spider-Man game, the new Spider-Man game, and this really made me feel like a dumbass because he kept talking about how much he wanted it. And then so I sent him, he lives in America, I sent him the money for it on PayPal. And there's a fee on PayPal, of course. I sent him the money and come to check my phone later. He had sent it back and said, like, no, I don't want that. And I said, okay. And I realized we had just donated $14 to Jeff Bezos. This is terrible. We just like used it to transfer money back and forth. So
it's not emotional.
I just felt like a dumbass, you know? I was like, I can't believe I gave this.
I didn't even know he owned PayPal.
Oh, wait.
Jeff Bezos owns Amazon.
Amazon, which bought PayPal.
I thought. Oh.
Or, God, I don't know. Anyway.
$14.
I've definitely spent
he probably
something stupider than that, but I can't think of it right now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm sure the audience was riveted by that response.
Yeah, you're dealing with thousands. I'm like, $14, I just never...
And sadly, a recent example, I am still trying to sell this ticket. If you know anybody, if you know a friend of a friend, I might even sell it at a loss just to sell it. So please.
Anybody?
If
there's any like ardent investors out there who think that they could buy it at a loss and turn it again.
Yeah.
Buy it from Catherine.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's.
Because I've never had to resell a ticket before. Ticketmaster takes so much.
What do they take?
It's like they feed. Sorry, I don't know how to explain this. There's two separate fees.
Mm-hmm.
And because this ticket is so expensive, it ends up being like hundreds of dollars extra. So you have to sell it for so much more just to make the money back. So me, I'm like, I'll sell it at a bit of a loss because then it's like if I'm selling it directly, then I'm not just like handing over all this extra money to Ticketmaster. That's basically what I'm saying.
That's tough.
Okay, let's move on. Okay, so this is a bit of a topic that I've seen discussed throughout the season. And that is, you know, the face of the NBA. And that the last five MVP winners have been essentially not American. And people, American media, have talked about, you know, can the face of the NBA be a non-American player? Dario Saric did an interview this week that I thought was interesting when he talked about how the league could probably be more European than it currently is, but he feels like the league would likely put a stop to it and that they wouldn't necessarily allow that to happen, which I thought was an interesting perspective because it's not something I've heard before. And he, someone being in the league who feels that way is to me somewhat telling, but for me, like as a Canadian, I could give a shit. Like, yeah. I don't care if the quote unquote face of the league is American or Canadian or wherever they're from. Like, I just want them to be a very good basketball player and a stand-up guy. Like, that's what I care about. So it's like when I hear all this American media talk about how the face of the league has to be American so they can market it to Americans, I'm just like, what is this disconnect?
So I think probably it falls directly under like American exceptionalism. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's just that xenophobia is obviously baked into that. What I thought was interesting is like, and I could not have the proper amount of scope for this, so forgive me, and I won't have any strong opinions about it for that reason, but it is funny that like xenophobia has 100% been like a typically white guy in America thing. Like those are the strongest xenophobes out there, but actually like the most popular opinions of people championing kind of like anti-African or anti-European sentiment in the NBA has been like black men, former black players kind of dissenting upon like the Europeans or the African players coming over, which is like an odd turn on its head to see those people representing like the xenophobic views. Of course, that's just what I've seen. I'm not suggesting that black people have become more xenophobic than white people. Of course, that is not my suggestion. I just do think it's like, oh.
I'm going to get Daniel, our intern, to clip that. Oh, God. Yeah. I'm kidding.
That is a small scope of what I've seen. And of course, is relative to what the algorithm or like what Twitter is feeding me. So me seeing like Gilbert Arenas and people of that ilk championing these ideas is where that perspective is coming from, and being like, you know, xenophobia is, you know, very pervasive, obviously. Do I care? No, this is also when people talk about like, oh, we need the NBA to like do better head to head against NFL games, or we need the NBA to like grow. Why? Why? Who cares? Mm-hmm. You're a fan. Now for, I guess, myself, is it beneficial for the league to grow and for more eyes at clicks or whatever? I guess. But to watch a sport and think about it from like the profit motive or like, you know, growth incentive, what is that fun? Like, are you sitting around being like, this league needs an American face on it? Why? Who cares? Like, don't you enjoy watching like Jokic play or Embiid play or Giannis play, that like the international MVPs who have come over? Do you not enjoy that? Mm-hmm. Would you be getting your rocks off if like Giannis was named like James, like Donahue, and you're like, this guy's American?
That's such a good Milwaukee name.
Yeah.
Milwaukee. Yeah.
You know, it's just like, why does that stuff matter? You know? Like the MLB, is the MLB like, oh no, Shohei, oh gross, not American? No, they're like, oh my God, the international game, it's so beautiful, we love it, we kneel before it. I don't know, just like the players are there, market the players you have, you're marketing, market them, market Scotty Barnes as like the big American player. He is going to be one of them for the foreseeable future. Do so like that. Appeal to those people who want to see the waving flag behind him. Take a video of him with his hand over his chest. I don't care, really. But like, to think that this league will suffer if we don't have like an American person, as Leo Messi came over from Argentina, played in Spain, played in France, and completely shook up American soccer. It's so unimaginative. It's so clearly sitting just in xenophobia. It's just like, why doesn't the guy look like me and talk like me and like the things I like? And it's like, is that what you need to enjoy the basketball? Please grow up, type thing.
Yeah, I completely agree. I love how you started this by saying you weren't going to have strong opinions.
But... I only have strong opinions on like, only have strong opinions on where I've seen it parroted and like the interesting perspective from that. But as far as like the thing overall, I'm like, is this a baby brain? Like, it feels baby brained. Mm-hmm, he's like, why isn't the guy from where I'm from? Like, I didn't have any problem watching the NBA between Steve Nash and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Mm-hmm. I wasn't like, why isn't there a Canadian MVP? Now, with Shai like hot on the heels in the race and looking like he could win it, you're like, yeah, that's really cool that that's happening. But you don't necessarily like yearn for it and say, if this doesn't happen, my fandom may dwindle and I wonder what happens to the sport. Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't know, basketball's really good. You just like cheer for the guys. I don't know why people need like the idolatry along with the enjoyment, perhaps.
Yeah, look, I completely agree with you. The whole thing doesn't really make any logical sense to me. I mean, I feel like, sorry, you said a lot, so I'm kind of digesting it. But no, but in a good way, for sure. I mean, yeah, you're absolutely right. The whole thing doesn't make any sense. I mean, like you said, even from a marketing perspective, like, there are so many like very charming and likable things with someone like Jokic or someone like Giannis. Like, there's so many things to like about those players if you're trying to, you know, branch out and showcase their personalities and stuff. And then the other thing I feel is like, you know, we started off the 2000s, I feel, really talking about international expansion with the NBA, right? I mean, obviously, you know, we have the Raptors and, you know, the Vancouver Grizzlies and stuff like that, but there was always talk about, like, how do we get the league to grow internationally, right? Like, how do we get an audience in Europe? How do we get an audience in China? How do we get a larger audience in Australia? Like, that was the talk for a really long time. And so, and still is to some degree. So then to turn around and be like, oh, the face of the league still has to be American, really counterproductive, and really, like, it kind of goes against the natural capitalist nature of wanting to grow the league in general anyways. So it just doesn't make sense to me on so many levels, but I just feel like that conversation is growing and growing, and you were a good person to have that conversation with.
I'll also say the Dario Saric thing, I would lean again on, like, the burden of proof. It's a pretty big accusation to suggest that, like, the NBA is dissenting upon, like, European people having more of an impact on the league. Just, like, at the start, him being like, oh, no, they won't allow that to happen. It's like, I feel like they would have, like, go ahead.
No, in fairness to him, it was phrased more like an opinion than a fact.
Sure. Yeah, I would, just to your point about, like, the capitalist nature of it, I think the NBA will allow whatever type of play that creates the most money to happen.
Right.
And if it's European players, African players, East Asian players, whatever, like Southeast Asian, whatever it ends up being, they'd be like, yes, give support, in my opinion.
Yeah, like, I don't think we're going to be in a world where suddenly, like, no one American is in the league. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they'll be fine.
People are doing great replacement theory for the NBA. Good luck. Yeah. We must secure the future of our American-born players. Yeah, you know, whatever.
You mentioned Gilbert Arenas earlier. One thing I wanted to talk to you about, this is just kind of a fun topic that I feel like I wanted your opinion on, and I think a lot of the Raptors Republic listeners would love your opinion on, is player podcasts. So we've seen a massive boom, especially over the last year, but it's been happening for the last several years, in player podcasts. And I feel like a lot of people have varying opinions on player podcasts, despite the fact that most of them are doing quite well. You know, I feel like there are some people who are, I would call it, like, it's almost like a personal propaganda machine, where it's like, not how most people see the truth, but it's them just sort of pushing their brand. And then there's other people that are maybe a bit more objective. As a famous podcaster yourself, and yes, I phrased it that way without making you sound like a four-year-old. How do you feel about player podcasts, Samson?
I really like, now I don't listen to any of them actively. My consumption of these things is through clips. I think that Jeff Teague is one of the most gifted storytellers I've ever heard, as far as, like, being funny. I think that he's extremely humble and capable of telling a story from somehow, like, a bench player's perspective, even though he made an all-star game. He makes himself sound like he didn't deserve to be on an NBA floor, and he was quite good. That level of, like, I'm the funny guy, instead of a lot of players are very attached to their skill level, talent level, and accolades at the NBA level. He just completely did away with all of that. Incredible.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. That makes the podcast he does, like, very, very funny and very, very worthwhile, I think. Paul George, I think, does a really good perspective on how players achieve things. And I think he has a really good perspective on kind of, like, the machinations of the NBA. And I know you said most of them do well. I don't think they do. I think we hear about a few of them that do well, but a lot of players have podcasts. Like, a lot. A lot of them have stopped podcasting because it wasn't worth their time necessarily, and it didn't get the attention that they think it maybe deserved. And I think it is because people, being a player has a significant amount of interest because of your perspective. but you're not guaranteed to be able to vocalize that in an interesting way or in a compelling way. And you're not guaranteed to have carte blanche to tell all the stories that might make people interested in you.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is related to like Gilbert Arenas versus JJ Redick. JJ Redick mostly is a guy who deep dives into basketball, is kind of wondering about the machinations, the perspective of the players, how they achieve things. Gilbert Arenas does that at times, but does a lot of like salacious, you know, name calling, hot takey stuff, and is surrounded by a bunch of players who seem maybe more interested in providing that perspective of like, he ain't shit type mm-hmm. of analysis, which is fundamentally not a lot different than like Stephen A. Smith or Skip Bayless or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
And JJ Redick mostly is engaged in like analysis versus, and then sometimes there's like a bit of tea or something on the podcast, right? And I'm not saying one is better than the other. Whatever you like is whatever you like. But even the players have to diversify and become personalities and provide like a different level of entertainment or infotainment based on what the market wants. And I think there's room for like one JJ Redick. There's room for a lot more of like Gil's Arena type stuff, because people do on average, I think, kind of eat up the more salacious stuff. So, and the more salacious stuff travels more quickly because of like clickbait and because of hot takes mm-hmm. and all that. So, but there are a lot of players, I think, like, you know, CJ Miles, we know he did a podcast because he did with Amit, you know, on Yahoo Sports, but it's still, as far as like viewership, not a big podcast. Chris Boucher's podcast, as far as like being understood or known in the wider canon of the NBA, like he and Mike doing the podcast together, it had an effect on Raptors, you know, Raptor fan consumption for some time, but the NBA wide, it didn't really penetrate. Terrence Ross has been podcasting for forever. He has been like Twitch streaming for forever, I think, and no shade to Terrence, but probably his podcast, as far as like reach and impact, is probably less than like a Raptors Republic one at this point. And so it's not guaranteed success. And Trey Young's, I think, is popular, but honestly, I think it mimics kind of like other types of podcasts with a higher ceiling, but the amount of funding behind it is kind of what dictates and marketing is kind of dictates how much space it has, you know, for people to listen and pay attention to it. And a lot of that is probably reliant on these players are interesting, but similar to a lot of other successful podcasts is like, if you want to get it off the ground, you have to have a really good editor and guys who cut clips and make edits and do all that kind of stuff, who chop up the podcast into, I don't know, bite-sized stuff. And then, as I said, like, this is how we're hearing about these types of things. But I don't think it's guaranteed success, although I do think it is funny that there's like the white co-host guy who's just there. Hilarious.
Is that what you aspire to? I'm joking, obviously
not. I had a tweet actually where I was like, and I had the most odd response to the tweet, because I don't think it was a unique thought. I think a lot of people saw like it was Trey Young's podcast where it was like yet another white guy who's just like, what are you doing here, man? Like, you're the white guy. And then everybody was like, okay, I've seen like four podcasts now where an NBA player is like, I'm the NBA player. This is my small white friend. Where people started thinking about it. So I made a joke about like, if any NBA players are looking for us.
Small white friend.
Where I was like, if any NBA players are looking for a small white like podcaster guy, I can do that. And then there was another tweet that I think.
You might be like, Trey Young's height.
He's taller than me for sure. I think he's 6'2". But somebody else had tweeted a similar sentiment to me. And I guess they found my tweet afterwards and they quote tweeted it. And they just were like, you know how there's like the Chinese fighting fish is like, if it sees itself, it would like throw itself against the glass if you put a mirror and just like kill itself. Or if you put another fish in the tank with it, it'll kill it. He quote tweeted me.
Did not know that.
And he's like, this guy should be ashamed. Please go make fun of him.
Trey Young did?
No. Just this random guy who had a popular tweet and he was like protecting his tweet. And then he was like, go make fun of this guy. And I was like, wait, what? Because we thought of the same joke. And I'm sure you're a comedian. You know, people, not every joke is stolen. Like, not everything's novel. You make similar jokes. And I was like, what the hell's going on here? But yeah, I made the joke because I think it's a good joke.
Yeah.
But yeah, a convoy of online people came after me.
And good I was like, God.
Whoa. It was incredible. And I said, like, I'm sorry I thought of the same joke as you, but worse. I didn't know how
to. That's respond. A kind response.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm a kind Twitter response guy.
You are. Yeah. I mean, what are your feelings on Twitter now? Like, I mean, you're still quite
the holistic
active.
Feelings?
Like, you're quite active on it.
Well, yeah, you have to market yourself, which sucks. Mm-hmm. But you have to say, I did work. Please look at my work. I worked so hard on this work. And you have to do that. Whereas, like, before, if you did our job, technically, whatever the publication was would be like, there is work. Here's the work. Please look at the work. Mm. I think that's mostly why I'm on Twitter. I was not an avid tweeter before I started doing this job. My thoughts on Twitter are that it is funny, at least for people in our industry who do like earnest things, are like, hey, I did this thing, that the first response is like someone being like, my pussy in bio is like, it's so
wait,
funny.
What? What did you say?
Have you never seen that under a tweet? There's like bots that say like, they just tweet under everything. They say my pussy in bio. You've
no.
never seen that? It happens all the time, Catherine. I guess you're not big on Twitter. Like, you don't go on it.
I'm not big on social media.
Yeah. So you don't go on it very much. But yeah, that's like all the time. Like the amount of bots that are like promoting like, oh, here's like this new gambling thing. Or it's like, I have pictures of my vagina if you'd like to see it. Is like endless. And they just show up and populate under every tweet. The spam is crazy on that website. But I think there's a lot of funny tweets on the website. And I also need to be able to share my work with the world. So that's Twitter, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I love that you kind of laughed and blushed at the thought of the bots.
Yeah. Well, they are funny.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a little disconcerting that, like, there's no longer a spam folder. You just, it's all the spam folder now.
Yes. But you can't, like, not that you would, but you can't be like, not interested, don't want to see this, and then get less of it.
Well, it's under my own tweet.
Oh, I can't, like,
so people,
your tweet.
Yeah, they reply.
Yikes.
They want people to know. For those people who are interested in Emmanuel Quickly's progressions as a driver, hello, my pussy is also in the bio.
We'll see, this is why I love having you on this show. Yeah. People don't get this in the post game wrap ups. You know what I mean? Like, people don't get this.
You bring out the comedy in me, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like to think so. Well, yeah, I'll let you know if I ever get a bot reply like that, and that's when I'll know like I've
the
made
next
it.
Time you tweet, I'm going to tweet.
Under when I promote this podcast. That'll probably be the next time I
do. Yeah.
You can post that underneath.
That would be funny.
Okay, brilliant. we should move on. It's time for our Raptors Homer moment here. And my question for you, and I wrote, my God, what is salvageable for the rest of this season? Why is this team still fun to watch? Now, I know you're going to have a good answer for this because you've been tweeting all week that this team's been very satisfying to watch still.
Yeah. Not as much last night. However,
no,
I do think the main three pillars of interest I have, Grady Dick probably above all else.
Mm-hmm.
Watching him develop some of his on-ball reps, watching him keep shooting it. He hasn't shot it well over the past three or four games, but them's the breaks. He's, you know, some of his finishing at the rim, which is aided by his prolific cutting and proficient cutting, which is great. All of that is like super fun to watch. He's making better reads on defense. He's like doing some of the early work to beat guys to spots. All of that to me is very interesting to pay attention to. And probably more selfishly for me, as somebody who is paying attention to the minutiae, it's good for my work because I will pay attention to the minutiae and deliver it to the people. And hopefully they like that. Fingers are crossed. Emmanuel Quickley as like the main hub of an offense that is struggling, where he doesn't have a ton of help. You get to see, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. We get to see his game pushed to the brink of what he's capable of and see what counters he comes up with. And any litany of whichever G League or G League adjacent guy you're interested in, Jonte, Javon Freeman-Liberty, Jamias Ramsey, DJ Carton, whatever it ends up being, Muhammadu Gueye, if he comes up, all that kind of stuff. Pick your guy, obsess over their minutes, and enjoy the little things, I think. And Jonte is giving like a ton of stuff to be excited about. Maybe not as like this guy's going to change the, you know, the fortunes of the franchise, but it seems like the Raptors probably found an end of bench big who they can actually have on the roster for years, who will be provide NBA impact, and they found him in the G League. That's what I think Jonte is, which is a great outcome for his career. Perhaps he achieves more, and we'll see what happens with that, but that's a win for the franchise. That's kind of what I'm paying attention to, I suppose.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I think Grady Dick's improvement has been, you know, good to, and a relief, frankly.
Dick is rising.
Dick is rising. I was trying very hard to phrase that sentence without saying Dick is rising.
did you? That was what I tweeted during the other game. I said Dick showing
significant. And it went. It traveled far. I saw.
Did you see the tweet? And this is again.
No wonder why you get so many spam bots.
Did you see the tweet that I tweeted and deleted afterwards? So I tweeted Dick showing significant growth, and then I quote tweeted it, and I said, hey, missed the start of the game. Can anybody catch me up to what's been happening? So the joke is I wasn't tweeting about.
Oh, no, I didn't. I did not see that.
I saw
the first one, but not the second one.
It's so stupid.
Wish you were a comedian.
Sometimes. I could try to be a comedian if I wanted.
Well, anyone could.
I don't think
try
I could. Yes, comedian. Exactly. I don't think I could be a successful comedian, but I do enjoy a laugh. Certainly.
Yeah.
No, I feel at home with you, Catherine. This feels like when I'm talking basketball, I just want to break free. Let me tell my stupid little jokes.
I don't fully believe that, but I appreciate the sentiment nonetheless.
Yes.
Yeah. Look, I guess we have a bit of a shorter podcast this week because we're already at our hottie highlight.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, fans. I just didn't have a lot to say about the Raptors this last week.
I think there's like 14 minutes of basketball talk, 42 minutes in. So whoever, the people who are listening, I think have to be invested in, you know, comedy podcasts. I don't know if they listen to Tiger Belly or Andrew Santino or anything like that, and they see our repartee and they're like, these guys might have what it takes. That's one that's one person who's listening.
Listen.
The other person, oh, go ahead.
No. Finish, please.
The other person is like, I like Catherine and Samson. Whatever they say is fine and funny, and I'll enjoy it along for the ride. And there's another person who is like fuming that they've had to mine 14 minutes of basketball conversation out of 42 minutes of like ticket sales, xenophobia commentary. And
that was basketball related.
It's like adjacent to basketball.
It was basketball related for sure.
I guess, you know what? I think about basketball as like specifically the on-court stuff. So there's actually way more basketball conversation in this podcast than like.
But that's what this podcast is. And this is the void that we fill on Raptors Republic.
I love it.
Listen, I appreciate everyone who listens to this.
I don't
show.
Listen to sports podcasts.
I'm just saying podcasts. The people.
I would listen to this one.
The people say, who
what
listen
does my
to this
girl
show,
Catherine I, think? I, why she's so funny.
I want you to know that it truly does mean a lot to me. I mean, I know like, you know, I mean, I don't really, I should look up the numbers, but I don't. But I can see on YouTube that, you know, your stuff does significantly better.
Oh my God.
I did have a negative comment once that was like basically saying like, get this girl off the channel. She clearly has lower views than everyone else. And I was like, oh.
Did you tell them to go fuck themselves?
No, because that would be giving him what he wants. You know what I mean? Like, I think, you know, I kind of had a moment where I was like, oh, like that one hurt a little. But then I was like, you know what? I'm going to show up for the people who show up for me, like for real. You know what I mean? And then it is what it is. And then if it grows, it grows. And it's all good either way, you know.
That's the healthy perspective on this kind of stuff. Is like everything is commodification to some degree. I get it. That's the world we live in. But if there are people who listen to you and like you, and you serve a purpose in their day or their week or whatever, and you don't worry about numbers, and you know that there's some people out there, then it's, as long as you're okay with the time you spend putting into this, then I think that's super, super worthwhile.
Yeah, thank you. I think so. I mean, I think like I could put more time into this in terms of like, you know, like you were saying earlier, like clipping it and stuff like that. Like I'm not even on TikTok, which is like crazy as a comedian as well. But I figured out a way to make a living doing this.
Could we do like we should do a podcast with like, maybe we'll just do that during the summer. You, myself and Alan, we should do a podcast about like,
yeah,
trying to exist on social media as comedian/sports, like the intersection. Yes.
Alan Shane Lewis, shout out. Yeah.
Yeah. Because he has really interesting perspective on social media, I think, as well. And one that I agree with. Mm. And probably one that you agree with too. So
yeah, I think so. I love
He's
that.
Also so handsome and bald.
Yeah.
Handsome. We could do a handsome bald man podcast, you know.
You too, Alan could. And I.
You could get in on that if you
like. I could wear a bald cap.
Yeah.
Solidarity.
You could do the bald cap just on top, and then you could have like the Danny DeVito hair coming out of the back. I think that
it might have to. I don't know if a bald cap could fit all of this.
That'd be funny.
Yeah, that would be fun. I love doing like a summer podcast. I tried to do a Christmas special on this podcast, and I don't know. I got somebody being like, this isn't about basketball enough, or why would I want to listen to this person? It was All-Stars and Sandwiches. We tried to pair different. We took a different All-Star and paired them with a different sandwich. But to me, it's like, that's what you do over the holidays. You have fun.
I'll never understand, ever. I do not consume that way. Somebody who leaves a negative comment. I never. I'm not an avid commenter online. Mm-hmm. I do sometimes. But only to be, like, to shower praise. And I don't hate watch things. Mm-hmm. And I don't have this, like, selfish little idiot brain that thinks when I watch something I don't like, everybody has to know, this is stupid. This isn't what I want. Okay. Stop then. Like, just go elsewhere. Do your thing. I'll never understand it. But I guess that's the world we live in. Bunch of stupid little people with like idiot brains.
It is. I mean, I forgot to turn on, as you were saying that, I'm like, I forgot to turn on my lamp. I got a compliment on my lighting, which shout out to you. I appreciated that. And then I was like, it's just a lamp to the side. That's all it is. You have a whole, yeah. I don't do the
Wait. I'm like Dune.
Yes.
Bring Spice production back to the level it needs. Push Bravo. Push hard. Wait.
Oh my God.
I feel like a Dune character now, like a Harkonnen.
This is classic ghost stories right here.
Ooh, wait. Okay. For audio listeners, I'm manipulating time and space with my ring light.
Yeah, time and space.
Yeah.
Not just lighting.
No, it's all, we're bending reality.
You do kind of look like a villain right now.
Did you watch Dune 2?
No, I've seen the first one.
Well, you need to watch the second one.
I didn't like the first one. Listen, I felt like they spent more time explaining those ugly sweatsuits and how they work. Oh my God, Samson. Pretending to disconnect. They spent more time explaining two minutes
talking about a still suit is too much for me. And you say you don't like TikTok.
Look, can I finish? They They spent more time explaining how those sweatsuits work than the actual plot in any way, shape, or form. Not that plot should be explained.
I was about to say plot need not be explained.
Listen, I'm a screenwriter. That is actually how I think. Oh,
you're a screenwriter?
And you don't like Dune, the movie that the saved first cinema? Dune was not good. It was not good.
Oh my God, Catherine. This is so regressive.
I've heard
you're better than this, quite frankly.
I've heard the second one is better. I've heard the second one is better.
Well, what you should be hearing is that the second one is like an achievement of cinematic proportion and helps validate intentional, intelligent, meaningful movie creation, first of all. Wow. And the first one is like that too. I, of course, read the Dune Saga. I am biased.
Yes, of course. Yeah, I've not read the book, so I have no idea what's going on. I have a basketball-related thing to say.
Shame on you. I need to say that before we get out of here.
I didn't even say what the hottie highlight of the week is, but I do have a basketball-related thing to say about Dune, and then I'll do the hottie highlight of the week, okay. And then you can continue to shame me for not liking the first Dune movie. Okay, so as people may know, there has been more increased talks again about a WNBA team in Toronto.
Yes.
So Larry Tannenbaum is doing an independent bid, separate from MLSE, towards getting a WNBA team. Very exciting. I saw a post, I believe this was on Instagram, about what the team should be named. And multiple people said, well, since the Raptors were named after a popular movie of its day, Jurassic Park, how about naming the WNBA after something related to Dune? And we're basically saying the Worms. Multiple people suggested that the Shai WNBA Halud, team,
the maker of the Deep Desert.
I could give a shit. Listen. If the Toronto WNBA team becomes the Toronto Worms, I might murder. Like I might actually murder. I might be at Yonge and Dundas Square screaming at the top of my lungs for several days. Like it would upset me so much. This is a lifelong dream of mine. To have a WNBA team in Toronto. They cannot be named after Worms. I don't care. They can't be named after Worms. No one wants to wear a jersey or a t-shirt with a goddamn worm on it. I don't care.
So I don't know how well represented the Worm clan is. Stop. I'm not sure, but I wouldn't want them to be named the Worms either. Like not remotely. I think that's literally
five or six comments were that. And I had to stop myself. Like it was not just one person.
That was the introduction Will gave me on the show. He referred to me as the Worm Rider because I'm a huge fan of Dune. And even it's not fine. We played it for comedic effect, but there's no way like dinosaurs are cool before Jurassic Park. Dune is cool not because of the sandworms. The sandworms are like a very interesting wrinkle in Dune and are, you know, very closely tied to the ecology of the planet. The spice must flow, as it were. Mm. And worms are up against it. They're only cool within the context of Dune. And you're like, wow, Shai Halud, this is like awesome. But as far as like outside of it, everyone's like, if you want to insult somebody, you call them a worm. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, you wouldn't be like T-Rex, Raptor. You wouldn't do that. So, I don't think it has the same juice. I think they'll be called probably the Raptor Ets, maybe.
Wow. Samson's really, really trying to start his career in comedy today. It's not going well. It's not going well.
I feel fine about it, to be quite frank.
All right. We thank you for killing time with me. This has gone very off the rails. And you know what? I don't mind. I don't mind because you are the face of Raptors Republic. Speaking of faces of the league, you're the face of Raptors Republic, so I won't get in trouble.
Do you think people wait as part of the league, the Raptors Republic League? Do you find it disconcerting that the face is a bald man? Are we looking for like different types of representation here?
I think Raptors Republic's pretty diverse.
Even Lewis is bald. Is this maybe too much bald?
I don't think it's too much bald.
Okay.
I mean, look, if Blake Murphy was bald, then it's like, well, now it's generational. You know what I mean?
That's true, yeah. But Will and Blake, Will especially, Will is like a hairline king.
Yes.
Vivek is a hairline king.
Yes.
Blake is not a hairline king, but he's like has hair.
Yeah.
There's one thing.
S has hair. He's lost some of it, but
I'm not commenting.
But there's a good amount of hair there.
I'm not commenting.
I'm complimenting S.
You can compliment him. That's fine.
Whatever. You two are like besties. All right. The hottie highlight of the week this week is going to Kelly Olynyk for being the first Raptor to get a flopping violation. Congratulations, Kelly Olynyk, finally breaking that barrier.
Do you think they should let him wear a snapback on the court?
No. I think it would fly off.
No. He hoops with it. He got married in a snapback.
I only saw that recently. Raptors probably fans are crazy. I bet we're the only fan base that ever cared. For all the teams he's played on.
No, there's no way. The NBA like fandom at large was this is Snapback Poppy. Like this is who he is.
Snapback Poppy.
Yeah.
Is that a handle? Because he should take it.
Probably already was taken, to be honest.
Snapback
with you.
Poppy.
He could pay like $400.
You should take it.
I wear zero snapbacks.
But does that matter? Nothing's real. Nothing's real anymore, Samson.
I wear fitted caps.
Oh. I don't wear any. They don't really fit my hair nicely.
You do have big hair. It's hard to make a hat fit big hair.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't have that problem.
Good for you.
Thanks.
All right, Baldy. let's wrap it up there. I would tell. I always end the podcast by saying, like, let us know what you're up to and where people can find you on the internets. But everyone who listens to this show knows where they can find you.
Can you put in the bio, like, the Google URL of just, like, my name?
The Google URL?
Like, the search. Like, if you type in Samson Folk and the search results, you just, like, copy that link and put it there.
Yeah, I'll do the image results. I'll do the image results and maybe I'll do the Google Maps results and then see if that actually tells us where you live.
Oh my God.
That would be scary.
Yeah, that'd be insane. Could you imagine? It's like the phone book. You used to be able to look up somebody's name. Well, I'm sure you still can. I don't know how active phone books are, like how important they are to the fabric of society anymore. But if you could just type someone's name into Google and be like, this is where they are. Insanity.
Yeah. Maybe short people are still using them on chairs. Probably not.
I was watching like a Conan skit 2 years ago. Very fresh in my brain. But he was doing like a Tinder. He was doing like a Tinder sketch.
Mm-hmm.
And he kept saying, like, why don't they have more information here? Like where their home is, so I can go to them and make them like me. And I was like, oh, that's so funny.
I love Conan. I think he's one of the funniest.
He is the, like, by such a wide margin, the best late night host.
Yeah,
like,
I agree.
Ever.
I agree.
He's a genius.
His podcast is amazing.
That's one of the very few podcasts I listen to.
Yeah. Have you listened to the Arnold Schwarzenegger episode?
I haven't. No.
That's really worthwhile.
Mm.
Definitely.
Does
go
he
back
do
and
that. An Arnold impression?
I think he does.
Very good.
And Arnold is like roasting Conan for like a lot of it. It's incredible.
I always really loved Martin Short's dynamic with Conan, you know? Like he walks into the room and Conan was wearing shorts and he says, like, well, you're coming from summer camp then. And like Conan was like, holy. He also did he did like one of Conan's last interviews, and he had the best introduction of any I've ever seen someone introduce. He walks in, he's very like, you know how Martin Short is. He's very like gracious or whatever. He says, "My goodness, Conan, I haven't seen you since the January 6th riots." And I was like, wow. What an entrance. Very good. He's magnanimous, I think.
Yes, that's a good word. That's a good word for them. Listen, everybody, thank you again for listening to the show. I appreciate you a lot. I don't know why this went off the rails so much. I don't know why we had such non-basketball related talk. We're mid-season. You would think this was an episode in August, but here we are, middle of March. I guess it's because we sort of know the Raptor season isn't, you know, we're not playing for much at this point, but we're going to keep it going as we do. Thank you again. Thank you, Samson, for joining me this week. And hope your comedy career after today is thriving. Did you think of anything else that you've emotionally spent money on?
No.
Okay. Well, that was in the biz, we call that a callback. Yeah. And you didn't yes and the question. So comedy career, you know.
Well, I'm not necessarily an improv. I like to make it work from what I'm seeing on the page, on the script. Okay. And that's
you're just pretentious.
No. That's out of a deep pretentious. No. That's out of a deep reverence for the screenwriter, such as yourself. And to think to have the type of like ego to think I could come in and off the cuff do something better. I don't agree with it all.
Wow. All right. Well, I hope we see more ghost stories on your many pods. I don't even know the Dune character that you are emulating right now. Listen, I'll watch Dune 2 at some point. I'll let you know what I think. Yeah. And I'll do a video like this. Actually, I don't have a ring light, so maybe I won't.
Whatever you want to do.
Whatever I want to do.
Whatever you want to do.
Listen, next week I'm sure we'll be more basketball focused, but I hope you enjoyed this off the rails podcast nonetheless. Thank you again, and we'll catch you next time. Bye.